Thank you, Vibhag, for asking us to drop in and talk to you a little bit about library activities and our recording studio. So Nancy Hagen is here with me. She's the recording studio manager. Hello. And she'll talk in more detail about the studio and the production process, because I think you're interested in hearing a little bit about how we do things. The library actually has an Amazon store where we sell the cartridges primarily. That's what we set it up for. It's been in existence for a couple of years. This project came about probably from about 3 years ago, when there was a whole national shortage of digital cartridges, and there was only one manufacturer of cartridges in the US, and they were not manufacturing cartridges. And so there was no supply. Nobody could buy cartridges, libraries, consumers, nobody, because this company said, we're not going to manufacture any more cartridges until NLS puts in an order and we have enough to go to manufacture. Basically, we were all held hostage for like a year. We couldn't get any cartridges. I didn't like that a whole lot. So I tend to get a little miffed when somebody says, well, you know, we're not going to do that and you can't make us and we're the only guy in town. So too bad. Tim McGrath on my staff said, why don't we make our own cartridge? I mean, why can't we find somebody who could make a cartridge? And I said, well, I don't know. Why could we? Should we? I mean, where do we go? And well, we went out and we found a vendor that works with us directly. And we tested it and we did, you know, everything to make sure it would work with the NLS manufacturing, the machine, the player. You could save things on it. But we took it one step further. And instead of just making a 4 gig and that was that, we also made an 8 gig cartridge and a 16 gig cartridge. Those two sizes originally were going to be mostly for end users, readers of, who download from Bard to store their books on, if that's what they like to do. And there certainly are a lot of people that are doing that. And the 16 gig will hold an awful lot of books. So the 4 gig will give you about 400 hours of reading. So, you know, do your math from there. You can probably get about almost 200 books on a 16 gig cartridge, if not more. So this year we actually decided to do, you know, we did a Black Friday sale. We had lots of business and we've got a holiday sale going on right now. So just to tell you, the 4 gig cartridges usually run $9.99 and they're going for $7.99 right now. The 8 gig usually sell for $10.99 and they're going for $8.99 right now. And the 16 usually sell for $13.99 and they're selling for $10.99. So we also sell the cable that you use if you use a computer to transfer books to your cartridge. It's a 3 foot cable and those are selling for $4.99 and they're on sale now for $3.99 because those are not an expensive product. And then we have over the ear earphones. Those are one ear earphones. Those are selling right now for $6.99. We don't sell very many products, but there's just a few and it's primarily the base to support the sale of the cartridges. It's been something, and we sell to libraries, obviously. That's probably our biggest market because they buy in bulk. And that was one of the purposes that I wanted to pursue this for, because as a library trying to purchase cartridges a couple of years ago to meet our needs, it was pretty annoying. We couldn't get any. So I make sure that we can sell to libraries as well. You can go to perkins.org/NLS. That will take you to the page that will take you to the Amazon storefront that we have. And we do ship everything Free Matter for the Blind to keep the prices low. And we have very little trouble with our Free Matter for the Blind shipping. So it works pretty good. I want to give Nancy some time to talk to you and tell you about the studio. Nancy has been with Perkins.
7 years.
How many years? 7 years.
Seven
and you've
years.
Been the studio manager for about four?
Maybe three, close to three. And I was actually a volunteer in the studio prior
to
being an employee in the studio. So yeah, probably close to 10 years total, I would think. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. So we're very glad to have her. And maybe she'll start out telling you a little bit about how the studio is faring during the pandemic, because it's kind of challenging right now. So
it is indeed. Like everybody, we shut down in March and no one was allowed to go in at all. So basically all of our recording stopped for 2.5-ish months, maybe 3 months. And before we were allowed to go back in, our studio is basically staffed by volunteers. We have 2 staff members right now, myself and then my recording studio assistant, Adam. And we usually have about 50 volunteers that come into the studio throughout the week. And they are primarily responsible for the narration and actually some of the post-production as well. We've really retrained almost all of our volunteer staff to be able to do all aspects of the production process to help move things along. So when we got back in May, we were told we couldn't have any volunteers. And we had a lot of stuff backlogged, obviously, from being shut down for so long. So for a while, it was just myself and Adam trying to get back into producing some of the recording that we do on a regular basis outside of the books. And eventually, we finally have been able to bring on a couple of remote narrators so they can record from home and send us their files. And then we also have 2 people we've been given permission to have into the studio. We have 4 booths total, recording booths. So now everybody has their own recording booth. So there's no worry of cross-contamination or any of that kind of stuff. So we have been able to catch up a little bit, but we're still pretty far behind. Basically, all book production has stopped, but we do have a lot of other projects that we do. We do a lot of custom projects, primarily magazines. We have 4 monthly publications that we put out, Boston Magazine, Your Dog, Catnip, and we do all of the newsletter recording for the ACB, which is a monthly project as well. We do 1 bi-monthly magazine, Yankee Magazine, and that's a really popular periodical that we put out. And it was kind of exciting because, or sort of, right before we shut down, we were accepted into the NLS program. They have a pretty high standard for accepting magazines to get put up on BARD. And we went through a very lengthy process. We had to submit several issues that they go over with a fine-tooth comb, and every little detail is looked at, and you have to fix it and then send it again. And so it took quite a while. And we finally got our issue approved, which was the January-February issue of 2020. And then everything shut down. So we're very far behind on Yankee. We have a few issues still to make happen with that. It's such a lengthy process. It's really taking up quite a bit of time, but we'll get there. In addition, we do lots of newsletters, lots of special custom projects that people send to us. We have some regular people that send us their quarterly or biannual newsletters. We do special books. If someone can't find a book they want to listen to, then we will do that as well. Some of these are for fee projects. And we have a sort of a scale that we do. Sort of our minimum price is $75 to record a book of about 200 pages, because it does take, I don't think people realize how long it takes to record one book. It's a lengthy process. Our narrators come in for about 2 hours a week, and they read for an hour-ish because they have a partner and they switch with that partner. So one reads for an hour and the other person monitors their reading, and then they switch roles. So the average narrator reads about 10 to 15 pages a week on a book. So if you have a 200 to 300 page book, just to get it narrated takes several months. And then we try to keep up with the post-production process as well before we send the book out. I can talk a little bit about sort of the actual recording process. There are basically 3 steps. There's a narration portion, obviously. And then the post-production consists of editing and reviewing what has been narrated. And we kind of do that concurrently. We try to edit and review at the same time to, again, try to cut down on the time it takes for us to produce a project. So the editing is a lot of basically taking out unnecessary sounds. It is trying to make the book sound fluid, so it sounds like it's cohesive and that you don't have any awkward pauses. Hopefully that the levels are pretty consistent throughout the book, which is tricky because we have volunteer narrators and not trained audio people. So to try to produce an exact sound week to week to week when they come in, it's difficult for them to match it exactly, but we try to get pretty close so it doesn't sound too different when you're going from section to section. And then we have any corrections the narrators have to do. They read those and we get those into the file. And then there's a whole process of marking up the book so it can be played on the player. So all of the headings get what's called a navigation point in the Hindenburg software that we use. So that way you can jump around the book to the different parts of the book that you want to listen to. So again, it takes several months for us to do that. And then of course we upload everything to BARD when we're done as well. and it's available on cartridge. I can tell you a little bit about the Hindenburg software that we use. The software is unique. It's called Hindenburg. It's a company based in Denmark. They have various products that they have. They're right now, it seems like they're focusing a lot on using their software for podcasting. They're doing a lot of webinars and Facebook kind of presentations and stuff on that. They also have something called Hindenburg Journalist. So for people that are writing articles, doing articles. Our program is very specific. It's called Hindenburg ABC, which is Hindenburg Audiobook Creator. And it was developed in conjunction with NLS. They spent quite a bit of time trying to develop this software so that it was very specific to the needs of an NLS recorded book, including things like so that you can have the levels, you can have put certain things in so that it meets the requirements that NLS has for their technical standards. And again, you can then mark up the book in the proper way so that it plays on the player correctly, which is very specific to NLS books. And we do our whole process. You can use it we do the entire process of our book recording through Hindenburg. Some studios are just using Hindenburg to basically mark the book up at the end to put in the navigation points. We actually use we use it for the narration, for the post-production, and to finish the book. So we use it for the entire process. It's interesting visually for us because usually when you have a sound wave, when we first started using it, it was odd because the sound wave usually has two, like an upper and a lower half. And the Hindenburg only has an upper half. So visually, it was very kind of weird to get used to at first. But eventually, you realize that it's working fine. And it took a bit of training, retraining for our volunteers for sure to use this software. It's very unique in that way. And now it's just part of what we do. So I don't think so much about it anymore. But at first, it was a little unusual. But they're great. They're a great company to work with. I did ask them in preparation for this meeting, and it is. They say you can use it with JAWS, but there are some quirks occasionally. But they're really good about offering support on that, so you wouldn't have any problems getting some help with those situations. I actually have no experience using JAWS, so I can't really give you any details about how it would work with JAWS. But I know that it can. If that's something you're interested in. So again, this program is very specific for us. I'm not sure if an average person would use it for anything specifically, unless you maybe, if you're interested in becoming an audiobook narrator from home, I don't know, maybe you could use it for that. But that's kind of what we do. And then our equipment otherwise is really nothing. We have, as I said, four booths, and they are set up so they mirror the inside and the outside. So we have a computer set up inside the booth and a computer set up outside the booth so that the person inside the booth can be obviously doing the narrating, and the person outside the booth controls all of the starting and stopping of the recording as they're listening for the narrator. If they make mistakes, they can stop them and then go back where they need to go and then continue on with the book. Some of our narrators are solo narrators. They will just be in the booth, and they can control everything from within the booth as well. And it's all basically just hooked up to our computers, and there's really not much else to it. And Hindenburg kind of takes care of the rest. It really reduced a lot of our equipment, actually, because we had preamps and all kinds of stuff that we were using before, and we don't need to use any of that now. So that's been really great as well. We had a very generous narrator several years ago who donated four tablets, or five tablets actually, to our studio. And that's been very helpful. We have a lot of, and I'm finding I'm becoming one of those people as well, as I'm into my 50s now, having a hard time reading the little print in Boston Magazine. So it's been very helpful. We can scan the magazines and then put the articles on tablets, and then people can adjust, obviously, the font size, which makes it much easier. But that's been very helpful in terms of our custom projects. We don't do too much with books. Some of our narrators do ask for a PDF copy of the book, and then they can put it on their own tablet that they have at home. Some prefer to read that way. I am finding most people still like to have the paper copy. It's hard to get people away from that, which I can sort of understand. You can make notes on it. It's a little easier in that way. But I'm finding, as I'm doing much more narrating now in the current circumstances, I find the tablet extremely useful in terms of our narrating. And then you also eliminate page turn noises, possibly. You don't have to stop at the bottom of a page and turn stop the recording, turn the page, and then start again. So there's a lot of great uses for the tablet. So we do try to incorporate as much technology into our narration as possible. And we've done, over the years, it's gotten much, much more than it used to be, for sure. And what else? Any questions anybody has? Specific questions?
Nancy, this is Frank. I'd be really remiss if you didn't start mentioning brands and models and bragging about microphones and headsets.
But we don't have, as I said, we don't have a lot of that. We have our headsets, our Shure products is what we have right now. We've used Sony as well. I'm blanking on the name of the actual microphone, the brand. They've been there for quite a while. But that's, we don't actually have any more equipment than that. We have our basic computer, a microphone set up in the booth on one of those sort of extendable arms. So you can adjust it to people's height and things like that. And then just the computer and the keyboard. There's really no other equipment involved in our process.
Now, I know that NLS uses a very specific file format for the audio files. 3GP, I believe, is the extension. Does the Hindenburg software generate those kind of files, or does it just, what does it do? Does it generate WAV files or what?
If I were to export a Hindenburg file, let's say, you can export it as a WAV file or an MP3 file, which we do with some of our projects because I have to then upload MP3 files to other websites, things like that. But for the NLS portion, it's all built into the Hindenburg system. So yes, when we finish the book, we have a button that we push that is called Export NLS Book. And it it does what we call building the book. That's how we figure it out. And then it creates a bunch of files that are specific to be able to be played on the NLS player. And then we have to protect the book in there's like protection software we have to use so that the book can only be played obviously through the machine or on BARD or whatever. The actual Hindenburg files, there's one thing called an NCHX file is one of the files. There's the 3GP. Yeah. There's a 0.AO file. I'm not sure what all the extensions mean.
I think a lot of it's part of the DAISY implementation.
Yes, that's probably true. Stuff. Exactly.
And the AMR wideband plus, I think it is, which is the compression piece of the NLS book creator part of the software.
Yeah, I should.
It compresses the files a little bit more.
Yeah, so if we wanted to purchase this software, how expensive is it?
It's expensive.
It's pretty expensive.
It's pretty expensive. I just paid our renewal for 11 licenses, and it was about $2,800 for 11 licenses.
Okay, but say a single license kind of thing?
A couple hundred dollars probably. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Now I have Hindenburg on my home computer since I'm working from home a lot, and I'm just opening it to see what else the audio file choices they have are the WAV file, the MP3 file. This is maybe specific to Apple because I have a Mac. It's called the Apple Lossless file, which is M4A file. Then the 3GP, obviously. And then FLAC, the FLAC file. Yep. And Opus is the other option, it looks like.
Those are all pretty standard compressions.
So those are the options you have to export files.
Could you give us the website that you can go to look at this stuff?
Are you still editing with SoundForge, or are you editing with this Hindenburg?
No, we do everything with Hindenburg.
Oh, wow.
Occasionally, I will still open SoundForge for a couple of projects. Again, if I export, ACB is actually one of the projects that I use SoundForge a little bit for. The only drawback of Hindenburg that we have found is the amount of plug-in options to kind of affect the audio. They're not terribly effective. They're very basic.
Generic.
Basic, exactly. Yeah. So we do have some other things like on ACB, I'll put it through SoundForge, like the noise reduction piece and compress it, that kind of stuff. And once you export a file, we also found from once you export a file from Hindenburg, unless it's going to be made into an NLS book, it loses any effects you put on it in Hindenburg. So if I put compression on it in Hindenburg, and then I export it as an MP3 file to send to ACB, I need to recompress that file.
Oh, that's good to know.
But if you choose the option to make an NLS book, it keeps all the effects within that. Yeah. I think they're working on ways to fix that. And I know there's a version 2 coming at some point. And they've been really good about taking suggestions from us. and I think they're going to try to incorporate some of those things into the new version. In fact, our previous studio assistant, Jonathan Hurley, has been doing some work with them on this, the side. He is helping them again, try to use ways, new ways to use the product. He's been working a lot with their podcast piece now. He's doing some Facebook presentations with them. So I kind of more of an inside person there now, which is kind of nice. And it is, it's Hindenburg.com is what it is. It's just, that's all it is, the website.
And Hindenburg, they do, I think it's B-U-R-G.
B-U-R-G, yep. Yeah. Usually you can do some online, you work with it, you can do some free sort of test runs.
Yeah, there. I think like there's a demo copy you can acquire from the site.
Okay, good.
And this they're really, they're super nice to work with. There's the time difference is obviously a thing because they're on a different time zone than us, but they are very responsive and you will hear from them for sure if you were to. And
if you go to the Amazon store on the Perkins site, you're probably going to see reference to Hindenburg because Perkins is the U.S. reseller for Hindenburg because they didn't have anybody in the U.S. that was selling it. And suddenly a lot of the libraries that wanted to buy it couldn't do business with a foreign government. A lot of the southern states had clauses in contracts that wouldn't allow them to buy outside of the U.S. And so NLS asked if Perkins might consider being the reseller, because we do international business with Perkins products, Perkins solutions. And we had a mechanism in place to be able to fairly easily pick that up. So we have been the reseller for libraries and manage their license renewals and that kind of thing for several years now. So if anybody is going to purchase it, you won't be surprised that you end up kind of circling back to Perkins because we handle all those, the sales for them in the U.S.
What would you be using Hindenburg for if you were to purchase it?
I have a recording studio here at home. One of the things that I have been engaged in is some audio projects. I'm working with a poetry co-op out in Western Mass, and they want their books done in audio. And what I've been doing is I've had people come to the studio and record the books, and we've been putting them on CD. But it occurs to me that they might want to expand into producing NLS cartridges. So,
that's kind of my
thought.
One of the other projects that has blossomed and gone into full bloom as a result of the pandemic has been the activities that we're doing using Zoom from the library. We started with, you know, a few trainings and they went really well. And then we got so much feedback from patrons about how they were lonely and alone and isolated and, you know, could we do something? So we started with a trivia, you know, hour that Aaron Fragola, our outreach coordinator, does. And he started that, and we've got like 40, 50 people that come to trivia. And it started once. Well, it's so popular. Now it happens Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they just do a lot of trivia games and stuff. And it's mostly older folks who get together, who don't have a lot going on. And they're lonely, isolated, and have no contact in lockdown and shutdown like we all have been. So, and then we have been doing Library Without Walls for several years as a call-in, operator-supported phone interview, you know, programs with authors and that kind of thing where you could have a presentation and then ask questions. And we've moved that over to the Zoom because it works perfectly well there and it's less money. Mm-hmm. So that was helpful as well. So we have our Library Without Walls program. We have Teaching Tuesday this coming Tuesday at 2 o'clock. We have David Kingsbury talking about web browsers and what you need to know about all the different web browsers. So he'll be our feature speaker on Tuesday at 2. We have Monday Matinee, which is an audio described movie at 10 a.m. on Monday mornings, audio described movie. Usually most of them are older classic movies because those are open copyright clearance movies that are easier to play over Zoom. They're cleared for that. And we have Perkins Listening Library on Thursdays, which is usually some kind of audio dramas or something like that. We had Wayne Piercy's trumpet concert, or actually cornet concert, a few weeks ago with Wayne, who's a blind musician here in the Boston area. That was very popular. We've been doing easy yoga on Fridays. It's kind of chair-based yoga, easy, nothing, you know, no standing on your head or anything like that. Pretty simple. But people have been enjoying that. And our yoga instructor is a blind yoga certified, you know, fitness instructor. And she's certified in yoga as well. Next Friday, we're starting accessible bingo. We're having bingo from 7:30 to 9:30 on Zoom for people with prizes and the whole thing. So I'm the Zoom caller. It was a new thing in my life. I never expected to be a bingo caller. So you do what you do, you know, make our borrowers happy. So we're trying to just do things that will engage and get people involved in something to build a community, I guess, is a kind of a way to put it. So people aren't going to be so isolated and feel alone. And there's just been a lot of that going on with people who are not connected. A lot of people in this group here have no worries about being connected. We're incredibly connected people, but there are so many others out there that have no connection anywhere. And the things that we're trying to do through the library to connect people are seeming to really resonate with a lot of them, and hopefully making a difference for those people who just don't have some of the opportunities or the ability to get into things as much as some folks do. So we hope to make a difference there as well.
How do you organize the trivia and the bingo? For the trivia, just people just yell out answers, or do you have sort of a way?
Aaron kind of takes, he labels everybody who's in attendance, and then he tends to go in alphabetical order through the group. And so everybody gets a chance to answer the question. If they don't know the answer, then he opens it up to the first person who knows the answer. But each person who comes up for a turn gets to answer a question. If they don't know, then it opens up to the full group. And bingo, people actually are getting a Braille and raised print, large print bingo board sent to them. It's a plastic bingo board with some tokens. It doesn't have very many tokens. So I tell people, if you lose any of your tokens, just use pennies. They're actually better. And the little squares are sunken. So, you know, your little tokens won't slide all over your bingo board. They stay in place. I'll be calling the numbers. And I have a big bingo board with all the numbers on it that I use to make sure, you know, and then at the end, when somebody calls bingo, then they have to call back to me what their bingo numbers are. So you say, okay, let's check your numbers for your bingo. You tell me what you have. And then you have to tell me the five numbers that make your bingo. So it's very accessible. At first I thought, how can you play bingo over the phone or over the computer? But it is doable.
Can you just speak a bit about, I just actually need the website for Shelf.
The easiest way to get to Shelf is I go to PerkinsLibrary.org, which is our website.
Yeah.
And then the second or third link on PerkinsLibrary.org says online catalog. You have to go to the online catalog, and then Shelf will get you in. And I do have instructions because I don't go into Shelf very often, but the value of Shelf is the studio over the years, we've recorded nearly 1,000 books in our studio, but probably only maybe 100 of them, if we're lucky, are on Bard right now. And the reason for that, they're all ready to be on Bard. But the process for putting things on Bard
is very lengthy,
is very involved and very slow. You know, so if I told Nancy, I want all the books on Bard, I mean, and she did nothing but put books on Bard.
Yeah, that would be probably job for years. Yes.
She would be doing it for years because it takes a long time.
It does,
and it's not the uploading. It's partly the bibliographic,
right,
you know, processing on the NLS side that's very slow.
Yeah. And we also have to mark up all the audio again with the right navigation points for the new So basically we're marking all the books up again for a second
twice.
Yeah. Right. But we're making progress on that. We did 23 uploads last month. I was very excited.
That's pretty good, actually.
At least that many of this, I think, yeah, Adam's been very, very persistent about getting these done. So
at one point, like 6, 7, 8 years ago, before Karen Kenninger, and the policy at NLS was, you know, you cannot put locally recorded books on Bard. Bard is NLS books. Locally produced books, too bad. So, but Karen Kenninger's philosophy was, you know, I welcome locally produced books as long as they can meet the standards of NLS. And there was a process that libraries had to go through and be evaluated and determine that yes, your studio does meet the credentials and the process that NLS uses, and you can upload your books to Bard. So we did that fairly early in the process because we've always used the same pretty much production processes that NLS uses and have very high quality recordings in our studio. So Shelf is where everything else that we have produced is available for download, and all the other books from 9 other libraries who belong to Shelf, because it's kind of a consortium of talking book libraries that use the same software, i.e. the Keystone Library Automation System, which is the same library automation system that we use, all got together and said, we will all put our books on Shelf. So I think there's 6,000 or 7,000 titles on Shelf. It's worth taking a peek at. And I will find my directions for that as well and get them, Amy, to you, but also get them to Frank so he can share them with all of you. And if you don't remember your login to get into your account for the online catalog so you can get into your own record, I mean, you can search Shelf without it, but you're not going to be able to download anything until you actually have your user ID and your password. So if you need that, you can email me and I'll make sure to get that information to any of you.
I started like reading some series. There was a series called, I think it was the Sugar Maple Chronicles that I started reading. And then I ended up finishing the series through iBooks, because after a while, I think Bard did like the first book and the second book, and then they didn't do any more of them. And I was wondering how they make decisions as to which series they continue and which ones they don't.
Sometimes what happens with series, like you said, they start a series, and then what happens is one of the studios from a network library will have already recorded other books in the series, but they didn't necessarily tell NLS until later on. And they've done books 4, 5, 6, and 7, and they finished the series. So NLS will stop. But the only way you will know that is if you use the Voyager catalog to look something up, which isn't necessarily always on Bard. So just like a lot of Perkins Library books are not on Bard, but they should be listed in the Voyager catalog, which is the NLS interface, the national catalog, which if you go to loc.gov/NLS and search in that catalog online, that's like the union, we call it the union catalog. It has everybody's stuff in it online. And you'll probably find a lot more available than if you're just using Bard as your source for material. Some of the things in the union catalog are not going to be on Bard because they aren't on Bard yet, and they're only available through on cartridge. And they're also, NLS is also starting to incorporate some titles from other countries into the collection, and you may be even seeing some of those on Bard. There's been an uptick in some of the foreign language titles lately on Bard, and they are getting those from the Global Book Exchange, or the Global Book Service, which is part of the Accessible Book Consortium of WIPO, and that's due to implementation of the Marrakesh Treaty. We're being able to get access to some books in other languages.
Nancy, how do you, like the Voyager book or Shelf, what are the methods by which you could read those books? I mean, you said you download them to put them on a cartridge, or are there other ways to read those books?
For Bard, you can download them also to an app on your phone. There's a
right
Bard
for
app.
Bard.
Yep.
Right.
For Shelf, I don't know if that's an option.
No, Shelf, you would download those books to your computer, and then you would most likely, I would say, transfer them either to a cartridge or a thumb drive and play them on a player. I'm surprised nobody asked me about the NLS Braille e-reader. And you probably have heard there is a pilot going on nationwide. I think it's Maryland, Pennsylvania, Iowa, and Utah, Kentucky, and there might be one other state. So they are testing the two models of e-reader, the Humanware model, and they haven't sent out, to my knowledge, the second model, which is manufactured by Zumax. I have not seen the Zumax model myself yet either. The pilot is going on right now. Then there's going to be a second phase of the pilot, and I'm not sure what states will be in the second phase. The actual distribution to libraries that provide Braille services to patrons, which would include Perkins, is hopefully targeted for the fall of 2021. I have seen the Humanware e-reader, and it's pretty nice. It's small, 20 cell. I would say it's very similar to footprint-wise to what I believe is the Chameleon in structure, maybe with a few changes, but slight. I think that's how Humanware is managing to do this, is that they're working off of an existing model. And then there's a lot of software differences, of course, because it's not the full-fledged note taker. It is a Braille e-reader. So it's intended to read Braille files of different types. But it does have a little bit of note-taking capability, but it's modest. It's very, very simplistic note-taking capacity. So I would say that the earliest we will most likely have anything available, if things stay on schedule, would be the fall of 2021.
Kim, Nancy, thank you so much. It was wonderful. We really appreciate this excellent presentation.
Thank you. Nice to be here.